So as we said, Mary is going to be speaking on step 10, which is continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. So Mary, I'd like to hear what you have to say.
Nice to see you, ladies. Here we are again, talking about the steps, and we're at 10. As he said, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. So step 10 is, who I am, Mary R., alcoholic. Sobriety date January 2nd, 1997, and my home group is the Lovely Ladies, Friday night, 7:30, 10th and Powell. So, it is the first of the three maintenance steps. And the spiritual virtue of this step is perseverance, and rightly so, as perseverance means persistence in doing something despite difficulty or delay in achieving success. So we as alcoholics, we come into this program on fire, man. We are desperate for change. We are desperate to get some semblance of normalcy. We're desperate to become sane, even though we don't even know what that looks like. And it is common for us as we keep working the steps and we keep showing up, and we lose our motivation a little bit. And what we know is continuing to do anything in our daily lives usually means that we get better at it. Practice makes perfect, and that's what it takes for step 10. Nobody that I know has ever enjoyed admitting being wrong, much less a bunch of drunks. And it is so much easier for us to make sure that whatever happens to us is somebody else's problem. But with perseverance, I love that word, in using the tools that we've gained, we're able, by the time we get to step 10, to stay honest and keep working on ourselves. We've built a lot of things up, and now the focus is right on to us on maintaining it. Reminder that in steps 1, 2, and 3, we made the decision to put us on the spiritual path. We said yes to a higher power, whatever that looks like. In steps 4 through 9, we took those actions that were necessary to remove the things that blocked us and separated us from the God of our understanding. We have trudged the path of the destruction of self-centeredness. We know what it is, and we have worked at destroying it. We learned that admitting when we're wrong and promptly being able to take care of our side of the street is absolutely necessary in order for us to maintain our spiritual progress in recovery. So we fully understand, or we're going to by the time I'm done with you, understand the importance of the word continue in working this step, as we're instructed in the big book, page 84. Quote, this brings us to step 10, where we continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. That's inferring that we got rid of a whole lot of other crap earlier on in our steps. Now we're working at new stuff. We vigorously commenced this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the spirit. I just love that. I like the idea of floating around without being under the influence. Our next function, quote, our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. Step 10 is also referred to as the 24-hour plan. Within a 24-hour period, we live our lives and we know that we're walking with our higher power, and then life happens. and we experience some adverse trouble, thought, emotion, what this step tells us is to pause. Take an inventory. Decide whether you got to make amends or not. And continue to go on your way. That's all this step tells us. Yes, we have been transformed as a result of working steps 1 through 9. We've had a revolutionary change in our way of living and thinking. Yes, we have. How? Because we have finally developed a power greater than ourselves, and we're not it. And we've come to rely on that power through that inventory and then the following process of making amends. Essentially, you know, we've realized some of these incredible promises, and they're coming true, and life's getting a lot easier, and we're getting happier as we live. And we're living, therefore, by the time we get to step 10, we're already into the solution. And that is truly a cause for celebration. But we can't get too carried away. The best part about practicing the 10th step in our daily lives is that the more we flex the muscle of self-discovery, honesty, willingness, and humility, the less apologies and amends we have to make. It's a miraculous process. When we begin to tend to ourselves, we don't get obnoxious, or not quite as much so. We give up those unwanted patterns of making amends, and we make amends right away. I often share my 10 steps with my sponsor. Not all the time, because I do them so frequently, but when an issue has been really bothering me and I've finally gotten it, you know, I've written it out a number of times, I've processed it, I let her in on who I am at that moment. And to me, that's really important because she is able to discern patterns often in my instincts and my character defects. And she can note if I am more off balance than usual, because, you know, you don't do a 10th step because you're all happy about it. You're doing a 10th step because things are going on. You're having feelings and emotions. Taking a personal inventory in step 10 means taking stock of those emotional disturbances, especially those that can trigger us with anger, resentment, fears. As it says in the big book, when we are disturbed, it's usually because we find some person, place, thing, or situation, some fact in our life unacceptable. A typical response to disturbance is, again, to blame our feelings and our reactions on other people. And we as alcoholics have absolutely honed that skill of nursing resentments and finding fault with others to an art form. We're experts. We often give people control over our lives when we say, oh, they made us angry, or I'm upset, or I really got afraid by that situation, when the reality is we have had something to do with that, and we have helped to create some conflict that person is probably reacting against us with. And how we feel about what has transpired is our own choice. We are deciding to be angry, upset, or afraid. And these are patterns of choice and behavior that we're really familiar with. And so, what we've learned previously is awareness before action. We are aware when our triggers are tripped, and we can therefore then take some accounting for it. Step 10 suggests that it is time for us to take responsibility for our actions and to promptly clean up our role in all matters. Hold on 1 second, I got a throat tickle. Page 84 in the big book tells us how to remain spiritually connected. quote, continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. In learning how to do this 10th step, I began by writing it out in the same form that I do the 4th step in using these columns. Same thing. It's about the who, and then it's about the what, and then it's about the instincts. Then what are we doing to keep this ball rolling? Why are we continuing to be upset? And then in the 5th column, our character defects. The more proficient that I had gotten and have gotten with doing it in that form, the quicker I am able now, in the midst of an upset with my husband, to know immediately that I am upset and where to go from that, with that, because of this inventory list. I call it the on-the-spot inventory. I'm trying to do it in my head because I know I'm upset as it's happening. From the 12 and 12, we commence to put our AA way of living to practical use day by day. For the wise have known that no one can make much of his life until self-searching becomes a regular habit, until he is able to admit and accept what he finds, and he patiently and persistently tries to correct what is wrong. This step is, it's helping us to detect what is wrong immediately. When we feel that something is not okay, we need to find out what it is. For example, I walk 3 dogs regularly, and I use back streets. I'm not on regular, I'm not on bigger streets, but I get this incredible resentment that just flies up in my face when I'm walking the dogs, we're off to the left side of the road, and some idiot driver drives past me at 40 miles an hour. Some of them aren't even watching the road. Some of them are in the mirror with makeup. Well, I've done that before, so I know that. But, you know, they're driving how I see it as irresponsible. My typical reaction is to scream an unflattering name which insults their intelligence and describes their inability to care for others. It just pops right out of me. But deep down in my gut, I already know that my instincts have been threatened, or I wouldn't be feeling like that. So in this spot check inventory, I'm aware of the character defect of fear. I'm being frightened. Why? Because we, my babies and I, could be really hurt when this driver is irresponsible and negligent. And I know that I feel selfish and self-seeking has popped up because for some reason I have an expectation that I should matter to this person who's driving down the street and hopefully being somewhat should drive respectfully, when it's really ultimately my own responsibility to keep my dogs and myself out of the line of fire. But I even have drivers that will drive fast up past me. My husband hates walking with me when I flash a nasty, you know. I'm yelling at them like it matters. Yes, I will admit that my fear and upset is probably exacerbated because I was run over by a truck walking my dog a number of years ago. Yeah, that's a story all by itself. But I was only hurt in a minor way. But I have this rage and anger that comes up, and I'm sure it's a residual. I don't think I have PTSD about it, but it definitely still upsets me. And in the 12 and 12, I really was amazed when I was reading in depth that you know, these incidences that cause deep emotion will cause something called an emotional hangover. And in the 12 and 12, it's explained as the direct result of the excesses of negative emotion, anger, fear, jealousy, and the like. It requires an admission or correction of errors now. You know, an emotional, that explains who I was even from a young age, an emotional hangover. I remember having such upset and rage as a young kid and then as a hormonal teenager to the point that, you know, shaking and crying and even well past the incident or whatever, I couldn't even remember what had upset me, I would feel just dragged down. I mean, for a while. And I finally found myself again in the 12 and 12, an emotional hangover. It explains so much of how, you know, my ism didn't just happen. My ism was a part of me for a very, very long time. And this explains, this for me was a great understanding. I'm always learning, always learning. So this is where we understand the suggestion, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. So I can't make an amend to that idiot that just passed me, but I can to myself, and I do that often. I amend that I had that expectation, and you know, I try to tend to myself and taking care of the animals, the dogs, me walking. I'm very vigilant, and you know, I know that I have a right to be there, and yet I just need to know that I have done well by taking care of myself. I will admit that some days are better than others. Some days I let fast drivers go by and I don't say anything. That's a good day. I'm consistently reminded that every time I am disturbed, no matter what the cause, there is something wrong with me. Wow. Yes, it has nothing to do with other people. It's all about my own instincts being kicked. What is my reaction to it? And then what are my character defects that pop up because of it and hold on to it? Here we're putting into practice a spiritual principle of perseverance, that stick-to-itness, that we must continue to take responsibility for our thoughts and actions before they get the best of us. The beauty of this step is that it can and will become a way of living and thinking, but it takes practice. The spot check inventory, detecting our discomfort or upset, analyzing it right away, and work on our responsibility for it. It's an efficient way to take care of the problems that arise every day. The Big Book authors tell us that if we follow this course of action daily, our obsession to drink will be removed. That's pretty amazing. Why? Because we're going to not have to anesthetize those emotions that used to take us down the river head first. We will understand. By the time we get to this step, we're figuring things out. It's making sense. Are we going to be perfect at it? Absolutely not. But we have more and more information than we've ever had before about ourselves by the time we get to step 10. The following passage describes more, even more, the promises that we're gifted with in the Big Book. Quote, "And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. This is the miracle of it. We're not fighting it. Neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. This is our experience. That is how we react so long as we keep fit in fit spiritual condition. That's what this is all about. Keeping in fit spiritual condition. And how do we stay there? By a daily inventory. And what is our reward? A daily reprieve. The big book further explains, it is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We're not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all our activities. So, another way to take an inventory is nightly before bed. Whether we write in a journal or we take a side-by-side inventory analysis, this is our opportunity to honestly ask, have I done to others today as I would have them do to me? I can also ask, today, do I have any regrets for any harms that I've done? Am I grateful for the blessings that I have received? Am I willing to try for better things tomorrow? We can even answer just yes or no to those. We don't even have to go into detail. But those are an inventory for us to sort out our day. Working a 10th step means continuing to do all the things that we have done for our recovery so far. A good, healthy 10th step is based on how well we understood and have worked steps 4 and 5, 6 and 7, and 8 and 9, because they are the tools that step 10 is built on. We have learned to pay attention to how our actions affect others, and when the effects are negative or harmful, promptly stepping forward and taking responsibility for the harm caused and trying to repair it. This is what it means to take personal inventory and promptly admitting our wrongs. That's how simple it is. So we're working this program on a daily basis so that the negative feelings and things that we encounter don't pile up. That's why this is called a maintenance step. In the language of the heart, Bill W.'s Grapevine writings, we are reminded, quote, so we need to constantly scrutinize ourselves carefully in order to make everlastingly certain that we shall always be strong enough and single-purposed enough from within to relate ourselves right to the world without. Because we have this disease of alcoholism, we easily fall into the destructive patterns that we've had before. Vigilance and self-restraint are the price we pay for our healthy recovery. Self-restraint, explained so well in the 12 and 12, is a willingness to admit when the fault is ours and an equal willingness to forgive when the fault is elsewhere. Equal willingness to forgive. Forgiveness. This is really the only step that we encounter that idea of forgiveness. We'll touch on it a little bit in 12, but we're encouraged here to not only forgive ourselves, but to forgive others. So, we have to ask ourselves, have we acted rashly? Have we spouted off with a quick judgment? Are we sulking often? Have we given someone the silent treatment? Oh, that was one of my favorites. I love that one. I now know that self-restraint is a muscle that has to be flexed and exercised in order for it to stay strong. And with that exercise, we're consistently acknowledging progress, not perfection. Yes, I'm grateful for progress, not perfection. Accepting what works and is balanced can also help us pinpoint what's out of balance and not working. Step 10 points out the need to continue to take personal inventory to find out when we're wrong. But how can we identify the times when we're wrong unless we have times when we're right as a basis for comparison? Identifying the times when we have done things right and when we're in the process of establishing our personal values are as much a part of our personal inventory as identifying our liabilities. Just like in our fourth step, when we were to account for our assets as well as our liabilities. In the most important business on earth, and that is us learning how to be decent human beings. In step 10, having self-discipline and perseverance, when we are initially in the program, can be a push. Before this program, we were self-seeking and self-absorbed, always taking the easy way out, giving in easily to our impulses, and often ignoring any possibility or opportunities for personal growth. When our lives cease to become all about our own selfish needs, we will know how important then it is about the giving love to those all around us and to ourselves. The perseverance that is required for our recovery calls on us to do certain things, though, regardless of how we feel. For example, we need to go to meetings when we don't feel like it, when we're tired, when we've been really busy at work, and especially when we're not in a good place. What's the saying? If your butt falls off, you just pick it up and you take it to a meeting? That's important. Other people need to see that life isn't always joyful and easy for us. That's why we need to show up, even when we don't feel like it, or we don't want to be there, or life is hurting. We need to be active in our home group. We need to call our sponsor on a regular basis, work with others, and to practice these spiritual principles. Because back in step 3, we made the decision. We want recovery. And those things are all the actions that will help assure our continued recovery. We do not dare test complacency because it can overwhelm and drive us down as quickly as our addiction got us going. That's what this step is about, maintaining our spiritual contact and a responsibility for ourselves so we don't become complacent and fall back into old habits. This 10th step is at the heart of us coming into our own, changing what we can, accepting what we can't change, and developing a growing wisdom to know the difference. Now we can participate in life and trust that we have options and choices when problems and conflict arise, which of course they will. That's called life, and life is about change and not necessarily always positive. Bill Wilson's wisdom is amazing and everlasting. He said, "No matter how unreasonable others may seem, I am responsible for not reacting negatively. Regardless of what is happening around me, I will always have the prerogative and the responsibility of choosing what happens within me. I am the creator of my own reality. When I review my day, I know that I must stop judging others. If I judge others, I am probably judging myself. Whoever is upset Whoever is upsetting me the most is my best teacher. I have much to learn from him or her, and in my heart, I should thank that person. I have been gifted with that understanding. I resist it sometimes, maybe more than sometimes, but I have also embraced it to the point where I know when I am upset by anything, it is my problem, and that person has shown me that I'm looking in the mirror at what can change that problem. So, here we stand at step 10, where we can be and need to be responsible. We want and need to be able to respond, because we're no longer clinging to the old patterns of behaviors and reactions. Yeah, we may fall back into them even occasionally, but with the tools of these steps, we now know how to climb out. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. So now we would like to open things up to our audience. Anybody that has a question for Mary, go ahead and raise your hand here. We'll get you the microphone. Or if you're on Zoom and you have a question at any point, go ahead and just speak up.
Hey, Mary, that was wonderful. I'm Shana, alcoholic.
Hi, Shana.
I forgot to introduce myself. I just had a question that says, I'm early on in this recovery. I haven't begun really my steps yet, but I wanted to know if you think it's possible for people to do step work, like step 10 stuff, even before they actually go through the steps. Because I find myself now with like listening to all your steps before this, even like catching myself with my actions or even my words and realizing like a lot of them especially are based on fear and trying to do inventory for myself now, and I realize I'm not like I don't have all the tools to do that stuff, but like is it possible in your mind to do some of that work now?
Thanks, Shana asked if it's feasible to begin working step 10 before she has continued on with other steps. And I guess I would say there is a reason why 10 comes after 1 through 9. And the reason is because we gain that understanding. We gain that there's a certain amount of maturity that you get. There's a leveling off of the emotionality after you've just come in. And so it is important that you would work at least the first three steps, because then you are standing at the threshold of 4, which is just a detailed 10. So I would say that you need to begin at the very beginning, as the song goes. And you know, it's great that you're seeking to learn, you're listening, you're hearing, and no one would expect that you're going to be able to put a lot of these principles into action until you have walked the process. So, you're welcome.
Who else has a question for Mary?
Hi, Mary. Jeff, alcoholic.
Hi, Jeff.
First, I just want to say that the 10th time, every bit as much as the first time, it hurts when you call me that name as I drive down the road.
Did you see the physical hand reaction that followed?
The gestures and the words, yes.
We're neighbors, so he can get away with that.
I loved what you just laid out there, and I thought it was interesting that driving scenario was, you know, one where a lot of people would say, geez, you know, you don't have any unrealistic expectations there. But I think it's that much, it's helpful for that reason, because a lot of times I find myself getting very mad when people are actually in the wrong. And so I think it's the character defect that comes out is, well, what's wrong with me that I'm getting this mad? And really just, I just loved it. But the question I had was, the table you held up with the columns, I mean, I'm familiar with it and I've seen them presented different ways. Is that your personal one, or is that available? Where's that available?
Joe McHugh, the book Joe McHugh, The Steps We Took, is where it comes. But we've added, and I don't know whether this comes just Erie or it comes out of New York, but we've added this fourth column. Right. Here. So that's the difference between the Joe McHugh book, which is an exceptional book, but this is, you know, our regular use of the resentment, fear, harms, and sex conduct. So,
thanks. Who else has a question? How about on Zoom? Anybody on Zoom have a question? Okay.
Hi, Marietta, alcoholic. You know, you mentioned that there were different ways or approaches to doing your daily inventory, and you mentioned end of day and morning. I just was curious, because I've heard about your practice before, you know, your daily practice. I wonder if you could walk us through when you do it and what's opportune in terms of time that you would spend doing it. Thanks.
Thanks, Marietta. I'm going to hold off on the details of that till next week, because that's in my prayer and meditation. But I do a detailed morning session. But, you know, it's really interesting that I had never seen this idea. I mean, I do the spot inventory. On-the-spot inventory. I guess I do it because I've used step 10 so often, but I didn't know that it was all written up and in the 12 and 12. That's where it's detailed how to do that. And I was, you know, I'm a little lax in my reading, I guess, after all these years. But I learned a lot about it, and that's why I've been doing it. Because I've practiced with the form, but I do have a very detailed morning session that I do. And I'll share that with you next week. You got to come back for those details, Marietta.
Who else would like to ask a question?
Hello, I'm Ryan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Ryan.
So when you and another individual are both wrong, and you promptly admit being wrong, and the other individual doesn't admit being wrong, do you just take it as is? You've cleaned your side of the street and no resentments?
Were you here last week? Well, you remember the situation with the guy that I hadn't talked to in so many years that turned out to be my brother, and how he acted? For those who weren't here, you know, my brother we'd had an altercation years and years before, and he beat me up, and he found me to be wrong, and his wife and him dissected the one sentence that I had said to him, which was, "People are more important than carpets." That was the sentence. That was it. And they pulled it apart word for word on how I had made him wrong in that. Well, and then I take him and we go for a walk and I make my amend, and he screams and yells at me all over again years later. And like I was, you know, and it didn't matter. It didn't matter to me. I didn't care. You know, it was just like I was having a conversation with someone that wasn't crazy, but this guy was crazy in front of me. And he's my own brother, and that makes it even worse. But, you know, when I can admit my part in anything, it just kind of lets anybody else off the hook. They can be where they are. I can't force a forgiveness. I can't force a solution from them. I just have to accept them where they are. And that was such a great lesson for me. And as it turned out, it was a great lesson for him also. But, you know, that's where the forgiveness comes in. That's where we have to be the bigger person and walk away.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Who else has a question?
John!
I know, I'm John, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, John!
Hi, I've noticed after listening to you for several weeks, I mean, you're very expert at process, and you really believe in the process. I mean, you believe in the steps, you have a process for each step, etc. Was that something that came natural to you? Or was that something that you had to learn? And how exactly, I mean, did you learn to embrace the process? Some of us are not as, some of us resist process.
Mm. I hear you. John asked about how the process, how I've done this and how I sound like I know what I'm doing. and I guess that I'm giving you my experience, strength, and hope because I've done the steps so many times. I have worked them, and I've worked them, and I've worked them, and I've worked them with my girls, and I've worked them with my sponsor again. And doing the steps over and over again has peeled the onion. It has led me to get it, to understand what makes me tick, and to be able to see all my foibles and all the situations, my wrinkles, and how it's, you know, I'm how many years into this process, and I've just started to become a decent human being. I remember thinking I wanted to die while I was in my addiction. I was so desperate. I was so lost. And I remember wanting to die, and I remember thinking, oh, well, I have this put on my gravestone, you know. Oh, she was a mother, and she was a wife, and da-da-da-da-da. I got into the program, and I cleared my brain up and a little bit. And, you know, if I ever have a headstone, which I probably won't, I'll be cremated and thrown into the lake. But I guess I would want it to read, Mary R. died a decent human being, because that is the only good thing that I can think that I have gotten out of this life. Because to be a decent human being means that I have tried to take an accounting for myself and my situations and my problems and the way I treat people. And so, you know, the steps have taught me how to be that decent human being. I have worked them, and I go back. And that's why these maintenance steps, you know, once you've done this, you know, and some people say, oh, I worked the steps once, that's all I need to do. Well, maybe for them that's cool. But I had to dig. I really had, and it was solid clay that I had to dig through in helping Mary to come up out of the mire that I had lived in for so long. And you know, it talked about, I talked about how, you know, that urge to drink will go away. Well, that urge to be a nasty person and to get my own way and to hurt others and not care about it, that's not who I am anymore. And yet it was so much. It was my calling card for so long, because I really just didn't care about you. I only wanted to get what I needed. And that's what has changed. That's why. This may sound simple, but it's taken a lot of years and a lot of work to get here. So, thanks.
Evening, Mary. Renee, alcoholic.
Hi.
So my question for you is that when you have, so you've gone through your steps and you've completed your fourth step and you've gotten up to your 10th and your 10th, 11th and 12th and you're doing your continuation inventories, do you feel that it's necessary to go back and do second, third, fourth, fifth, fourth step? Or do you feel that a daily inventory is sufficient because it should be covering all aspects of said issues?
Thanks. The question was, I'm just reiterating questions because the girls on Zoom said they don't hear the questions. They don't hear them coming from that. So that's a thought for, I don't know what can be done about that. But is it necessary to keep doing steps 1 through 9 if you're taking care of the maintenance steps, was the question that was just asked. So I had committed after probably year 5 or 6 when I really started to work these steps that I was going to work these steps every year. And it's happened for most of it. Do I have to? I do an abbreviated version. I do it with the Joe McHugh book, and I do 1, 2, and 3 together. I do 4. I sit with my sponsor and go through it, and then I come through 7, 8, 9, and there I am again at 10. So I do an abbreviated version. It isn't a long, drawn out. You know, I may have a few pages on my fourth step, but for me, it's vitally important that when I go to address the steps, that I am, when I do them in their 1 through 9, that I start with 1, 2, and 3. It just puts me in a good space. It's like that major set-aside prayer, you know? It gets me right for to focus on 4.
So when you do your fourth step, what are you doing? If you're doing a daily inventory of any issue that comes up, what are you doing on your fourth step? Are you doing something you can hold on to, or
I'm often holding, it's issues that are happening now, whether they're recurring, you know, the anger that I have flash when my husband locks me out of the house for the umpteenth time, you know, that's been on a number of 10th and 4th steps, because it just raises this fear in me, and then he locks me in my own house. That's even worse, you know, and that's me. You know, he's doing it because he loves me. I see it as him trying to control me, you know. That's my own craziness. Those are the kind of things that will come back onto my fourth. Do I deal with it on my tenth? Sometimes, especially if I've really been volatile about it, it becomes something. But, yeah, does that make sense? You're welcome.
All right. Well, I think that does it. Sorry, Leslie. I didn't get to you.